There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. You like that?
I do. Very nice.
Greg Good and intro. Colin. Yeah. Here we are again, Canvas Wealth. This is our 1,000th episode. Not quite.
At least.
But we're getting there. Yep. Today we're talking about something that's going on in the world of finance right now, all around us.
Yep.
Inflation, interest rates, and the Fed chair hot seat.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that.
Yeah, a lot of news every day about that.
Yeah, and we had Fed Day recently, where Fed Day is the day that the Federal Reserve announces their interest rate decision.
Yep.
For that month. Yeah. The next Fed Day isn't until September.
That's right.
Right. So they take August off.
Yeah.
I guess they got to take that time off because they're renovating the U.S. Federal Reserve.
Exactly.
So they got to close up shop.
Well, they do a big conference in Jackson Hole every August.
Yeah.
And they bring in all sorts of economists and different people from around the world. And a lot of people will kind of wait to see what the communique is from the Jackson Hole conference. So it's usually an indication of where the Fed is leaning and what might be expected coming up in the next month.
Yeah, they'll make terms like either it was hawkish or dovish.
That's
or
right.
Things like that. Interesting to me is that we've been talking about two rate cuts being priced into the U.S. market for months.
Yep.
And that hasn't been happening because of inflation, right? Mm-hmm. And this, what we're going to talk about today is why Jerome Powell may have one of the hardest jobs in the world, especially in a possible, well, in a current, sorry, second Trump administration.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, let's start by talking about what the Federal Reserve actually does. And the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate. So the first thing being price stability. So what that means is they target annual inflation at 2%. So that's their goal, is to have inflation at 2%. And the second mandate, part of the dual mandate, is maximum employment. So keeping the labor market strong. And the way they do that, they have tools that they use to, you know, to try to achieve price stability and maximum employment. The first one being the federal funds rate. Mm-hmm. So that's the overnight rate, the rate that banks, you know, pay to borrow from one another or from the Federal Reserve. And the rate's currently at 4.25% to 4.5%. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they set it as a range. So midpoint 4.33%. So that's the current Fed funds rate. And it's been there for a while, but that's where they believe that they need to keep interest rates in order to have inflation continuing to move down to their 2% target.
Yeah.
The second tool they have is balance sheet management. So we've talked over the years on quantitative easing or quantitative tightening, and that's just a way that the Federal Reserve can try to manage longer-term interest rates. Because when they set the federal funds rate, as I said, that's an overnight rate, but the markets themselves, the bond markets, tend to set the longer term rates, so like the 5-year, 10-year bond rates. And so that's an auction process. It's, you know, buyer and seller. What do the market participants believe that interest rates should be?
Do you know, I want to simplify that for our listeners.
Okay.
It's kind of like if you're selling your house, right? Yep. And some realtor comes over and says, your house is worth $500,000.
Yep.
And you list your house, and then the market is actually going to tell you what your house is actually worth.
That's right.
It's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah, that's right. So bond yields are set by the buyers and sellers of bonds. But the Federal Reserve does have some ability to affect those rates by being a buyer of bonds. So like if they go out and say, we're going to buy up a bunch of outstanding government bonds, so that creates high demand and that therefore the prices go up and yields go down. So as we've talked before, prices and interest rates or prices and yields are inversely correlated. So so they can manage interest rates to a certain extent in the longer term of the yield curve by quantitative easing or quantitative tightening. Mm-hmm. And then the last of their main core tools, that's kind of redundant, main core. It's like is the Department of Redundancy Department.
Yes.
They use forward guidance to manage market expectations. So that's why people sort of, not only do they look at what the Federal Reserve does at their meetings when they decide what to do with interest rates, but they look to see what the Federal Reserve is guiding them to in terms of what their expectations are for inflation and stuff like that. And the other thing about the Federal Reserve is it's supposed to be independent from political influence.
Right.
And so in theory...
How's that working out?
Well, it's tough. It's a tough job.
Yeah.
So, but in theory, they just look at the data and they're apparently supposed to be free of any political influence.
Yeah.
Because, of course, anybody lowering interest rates always stimulates the economy, but maybe in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And so they want to be independent.
Yeah. So, and you know what, just to simplify it, like, because I find that, you know, when you're watching TV shows, there's a lot of like stock market stuff,
oh, yeah.
a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, market driven stories,
yeah,
right? And people think that they should just know how this works, right?
Yeah.
But to me, the simplified version is, you know, if you lower interest rates, it just frees up more money for you to spend
yep.
on things.
That's right.
Which just creates more purchases.
That's right.
Which boosts the economy, right?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
And strong demand, you know, can ultimately cause inflation to, you know, become higher mm-hmm. just because strong demand, you know, demand and supply, as we've talked about before.
Yep.
So really, they've got quite a challenge because they've, you know, the Federal Reserve typically tries to not overreact too quickly, but very high stakes mm-hmm. Based on what they choose to do at each of their interest rate meetings.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk a little bit about why they have these meetings to begin with. And you mentioned price stability. So inflation is obvious and present and all around us in everything that we're doing these days, right?
Yep.
In June 2025, so just a couple months ago, U.S. CPI was 2.7% year over year,
mm-hmm.
with core inflation at 2.9%.
Yep.
And as you mentioned, the Fed's target is 2%, so still higher than the target, which means that they can't really cut rates right now, right?
Right.
When they did cut rates significantly, it was when those inflation numbers were peaking at over 9% in June of 2022.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, they were raising rates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had that inverse.
Yeah.
Not only are bonds priced inverse, but according to that, my logic is as well. So, yeah, the Fed has a tough job. And you know, especially now when you've got a president who's demanding rate cuts, but is implementing a bunch of tariffs,
yeah.
which is causing higher inflation,
yep.
then they can't really cut rates, right?
No, that's right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, anyways, there's sticky categories like shelter. The cost of shelter in the U.S. is up 5.1%. Service is up 4.6%. with wages rising about 4.2%.
Yeah.
So wages aren't keeping up with those right. inflation numbers, right?
Right, exactly.
And in Canada, it's kind of the same thing, although a little bit different. That sounded very Trumpish right
same
there.
But different.
Amazingly bigly. The June 2025 Canadian CPI number was 1.9% year over year, with core inflation around 2.7. And mm-hmm. the Bank of Canada also targets this 2% inflation rate. So I guess it depends which number you look at.
Yeah.
But just recently, the Bank of Canada left interest rates on pause, right?
Yeah, right on.
So we're not seeing the runaway inflation of 2022 anymore, but there's still a simmer under the surface, especially in services and housing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what the central banks around the world, whether it's the Federal Reserve or the Bank of Canada, have to keep in mind. So
yeah.
So let's take a look at where rates are right now. So in the U.S., as we said earlier, the federal funds rate has been about 4.25% to 4.5%. That's been there for quite a while, and that's you know higher than it is in Canada,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's all based on U.S. data, you know, and the futures market actually tries to predict, you know, the number of rate cuts that they're expecting in the U.S. and currently they're pricing in one rate cut in the U.S. by December 2025.
Mm-hmm.
But the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, insists on being, you know, those kinds of decisions being data dependent. So,
yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, yeah, that could happen, but we need to see what the data is. You know, and the market's split. You know, inflation is cooling, but not fast enough for aggressive cuts. And because, as you said, there's a lot going on in the U.S. with tariffs. you know, and inflation is still above the 2% target, it's like, well, okay, maybe we just need to see what the effect of tariffs will be before acting too quickly.
Well, especially because it changes every day.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in Canada, on the other hand, we've had numerous rate cuts. The overnight rate is now 2.75%, mm-hmm. which is down pretty nicely from a high of 5% back after the heavy inflationary period back in 2022, I guess.
Yep.
And the forward guidance from the Bank of Canada does remain cautious because of wage pressures and a strong labor market. So it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a tightrope they're walking, because if, you know, if they make interest rate cuts too early and inflation reignites, then that creates more problems and possibly the need to raise interest rates down the road. Mm-hmm. Or if you wait too long, you might risk a recession. So,
man, I've been hearing about a recession for like 3 years.
There's been, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's just not happened.
It's the most predicted, you know, event that never happens.
Yeah. 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 But Powell himself, as we were talking about, has a tremendous amount of pressure from Trump.
Yep.
Specifically. Now, it's interesting to me because Powell was appointed by Trump in 2018.
Yeah. He forgets that.
Yes.
Yep.
And reappointed by Biden in 2022. And what Powell has pointed out in the press is that his position cannot be removed by the president, right?
That's right.
So that doesn't stop Trump from criticizing Powell sharply. I think he refers to him now as too slow Powell or something like that. Too late Powell?
Too late. Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Which is interesting because in previous years, he criticized Powell for raising rates too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
So Trump-aligned advisors are floating the idea of reining in this federal independence.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be that's a big thing, Greg.
Yes, it is. And we've seen just whenever there's discussion of Trump possibly firing Powell, the bond markets react extremely negatively to that.
Yep.
You know, because the bond markets, particularly as we've talked in the past, I mean, the bond market's larger than the stock market.
Yeah. It's actually hard for people to understand that the bond market rules the world.
Yeah.
You know, because it's never talked about. Right?
That's right. Yeah.
But
you see like dramatic swings in the bond market when there's any risk of Federal Reserve losing its independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Well, yeah, there's a whole bunch of things losing independence in the U.S. these days.
Yes.
But that's a whole other podcast.
Exactly.
For somebody else to get into. But central bank independence under threat definitely could rattle markets, and not just in the U.S., but globally, because the U.S. market is a very large component of the world market, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the Fed chair is supposed to be politically neutral, but in and after an election year, because we just came out of one, right, it becomes tough.
Yep. Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
So what does that all mean for investors? You know, so first of all, volatility is back, you know, with rates, inflation, politics, there's a lot of uncertainty everywhere. And I guess the good news is volatility recently has been to the upside, where it was incredibly negative. At one point back in April, I think the market was down almost 20%.
Yeah, it was.
From its high.
Yeah.
And then now where we're sitting today, the market is actually setting new highs. And so lots of volatility in relatively short periods of time. And so what do investors do? Well, as we've talked many times in the past, diversify across asset classes and regions, because that way, if one region is doing well or better, you know, because of either positive news on tariffs or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. you want to make sure you're participating. Locking in yields in the bond portfolios, you know, buying bonds now is not it's always a good time to buy bonds, but, you know, ideally when you buy bonds, you're buying them at higher interest rates, because we've talked about this in the past, but expected returns on bonds are very tightly correlated to the yield when you originally buy in. So right mm-hmm. now in the U.S., the 10-year bond is yielding about almost 4.4%.
Right.
And that's a pretty good guaranteed rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so for a portion of your portfolio that goes into bonds, to know that you're basically locking in a 4.4% rate, that gives a nice cushion in the portfolio against any volatility that you might see in the stock market.
Yeah,
Canada, the yields are a little bit less. We're at about almost 3.5% on a 10-year bond, but still, compared to where bond yields have been, this is not a bad place to have money parked. And of course, mm-hmm. we know that bonds, not only do you earn income from them, but there is the possibility of of capital gains, particularly if interest rates come down.
Yeah.
So diversify, lock in the yields, rebalance portfolios all, you know, regularly. And lastly, as always, try to avoid the temptation to time the markets, whether you're timing the Federal Reserve and possible interest rate actions or anything mm-hmm. else. Just try to avoid that because, in general, it hasn't worked. And just looking at some data to that point, since 1980, missing the 10 best days in the S&P 500 cut returns by more than 50%.
That's 10 days over 45 years.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And as we've just been talking, bonds are relevant again. You know, we went through a few years where bonds did not perform well, and that does happen occasionally. But with government bonds yielding, you know, 3 to 3.7% and U.S. Treasuries yielding 3.9 to 4.9%, depending on the term, it's always a good time to have bonds in the portfolio.
You know what else is a good time to talk about here, Greg, is that it's summer.
Yep.
And you wore shorts in here.
I did. Was there a dress code? I wasn't sure about that.
No, we don't really have a dress code, but
Hawaiian shirt, shorts,
yeah,
boat shoes. You know what just else?
Embracing this, which is awesome.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the next part of this because all of these interest rate cuts potential cuts or pauses or whatever also impacts things like the stock market, right?
So of course.
And as you pointed out, the U.S. market is setting new highs almost every day right now. Mm-hmm. And so the question we get from people is it too expensive to invest in the stock market?
Right? Yeah.
And I actually had this comment to my wife the other day. I can't remember what it was. We were just playing some dumb little game.
Yeah.
And she said, think of a question and I'm going to try to guess it. And I was like, this is the question I thought of, Greg. Ready for it?
Okay. Hit me.
Do PE ratios matter in a bull market?
Okay.
That's the question that came to mind.
Did she guess?
No, not even close. Because why would she guess that? I don't even know why it came to mind. But
yes.
But I think it came to mind because we're having these conversations with investors today, right? Yep. Like how expensive or reasonable are stocks priced today? Where do the PE ratios stand in the US and Canada? And does it matter?
Yep.
What history tells us about valuations and interest rates? And how new tariffs are adding another layer of inflation risk, which is just what we talked about, right?
Sure.
So let's talk about this. Is the market too expensive?
Well, let's take a look at where we are now. So let's look at the United States first. The S&P 500, the forward price earnings ratio, and again, just a refresher, the price earnings ratio is just, you know, essentially the current price of the stock divided by the earnings, the expected annual earnings mm-hmm. from that stock. So basically what it tells you is like, what are you willing to pay for a dollar of future earnings from this company? And so right now the forward PE ratio in the US is about 21 times. Mm-hmm. So you're paying, you know, $21 to earn a dollar of earnings.
Yep.
And that's above the 25-year average, which is about 16.8%. So currently, that's not, we won't say it's good or bad. It's just higher than it has been on average mm-hmm. over the last 25 years. Now, there's another ratio called the Shiller-Cape ratio, which is basically just a cyclically adjusted PE ratio. And what that tries to do is it tries to smooth out kind of some of the volatile ups and downs of things that happened, let's say, in a year like 2022 when the inflation was incredibly high and earnings might have been adjusted negatively. So the Shiller-Cape ratio is currently at about 37.8.
Oh, wow.
Which is very high. It's not at its highest ever. I think its highest peak it ever reached was something over 40 mm-hmm. back before the tech bubble burst. But it is relatively high. Okay, and so what does that mean? Well, it just means that people are willing to pay a very high price for stocks based on the expectation that those stocks and those companies' earnings will grow fairly dramatically. And so people are willing to pay more mm-hmm. for the earnings because a dollar of earnings today from a company, they're hoping will become $1.50 from the same company, mm-hmm. you know, in a short period of time.
Well, we're seeing some of that right now. There's a lot of tech company earnings that has mm-hmm. just come out.
Yep.
And the earnings have been higher than anticipated, which actually just will improve the price earnings ratio.
Right.
Right?
Right, exactly. So basically, you know, valuations are high, higher than average. Doesn't mean we're expecting any kind of dramatic change in the markets. Its valuations are not a particularly predictive tool from the standpoint of where the markets are going tomorrow or a month from now or a year from now.
Yeah.
But it's just a fact. In Canada, we're a little bit more closer, I guess, to the historical average. We're at about 14.2 times earnings, which is very close to the historical average of 14.5. And the valuations remain modest, certainly compared to the U.S., mainly due to the sector makeup in Canada. So in Canada, our stock market is much more heavily weighted towards financials, energy, and materials, which typically have those kinds of stocks have lower multiples than the high growth stocks that you see a lot of in the U.S. And there's less growth premium versus the U.S. We don't have a huge technology sector, for example, in Canada.
Or healthcare.
Or healthcare, for that matter. So there's less of a growth premium compared to the U.S., but potentially Canada would be a more defensive type of market because of the nature of the primary sectors we have in our market.
For sure. Well, you know, talking about the Canadian market itself, so I know Microsoft came out with its earnings a little while ago. It became the second company in history to have a market cap of more than $4 trillion.
Yeah.
And their earnings was a big surprise to the upside. Right.
Yep.
Now I want to put this in context for our listeners. The Canadian economy, the entire Canadian economy, is less than the size of Microsoft.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
So there's that.
Yep. So exactly.
I don't know where I'm going with that. I just find it to be a fascinating thing. Like Apple is also the size of the entire Canadian economy, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. Yep. Anyways, okay, what does history tell us about valuations? I guess it tells us that high price-earnings ratios do not guarantee poor returns. So don't get worried about this too much, like you were just talking about, right?
Yep.
Because just because a stock's price has moved up and or the market's price mm-hmm. has moved up, as long as the earnings catch up and it stays within that range, then
that's
it's
right.
fairly priced,
yep.
right?
Yep.
It's when the market goes up dramatically, but the earnings do not rise with it, that you run into some issues, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's right. And there's two ways, you know, which you sort of just summarizing what you just said, there's two ways for price earnings ratios to come down. Either the price comes down or the earnings go up. And so as long as earnings are meeting investors' expectations, then a high PE ratio is not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, and listen, where it's at right now, as you said, in the U.S. at 21 times earnings is not super high,
right?
Right. We've seen it much higher than
that's
that.
Right.
But when P/E ratios are above that magical number of 20,
yeah.
the 10-year average annual return of the S&P 500 does dip a little bit,
yep.
right? So people are always talking about how like the U.S. S&P 500 on average returns about 9% per year,
yeah.
blah, 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 mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Which is all true. But if you had a starting point in your investing world where the PE ratios were higher than historical, mm-hmm. then that rate of return might be more like 6%.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And when PE ratios are below 15, then you'd have a higher return in that period of maybe 10 to 12%.
Sure.
So, you know, this is important because U.S. markets tend to lead global cycles, which is what we just we're talking about, just due to their size, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we've seen things like in the 2000s, commodities and emerging markets, 2010s, U.S. tech, 2020s, which was what we're in halfway through.
Yep.
A lot of uncertainty around things like AI.
Yep.
What will that do? You know, so there's always a lot going on, but these valuations, don't use these as timing tools. They're just, it's kind of like checking the weather for me, Greg. You know, I look at the weather app. Mm-hmm. It tells me it might rain. It might rain. It might not.
Yep.
Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
Although in Calgary lately, I'd say it probably will rain.
Yep.
But that's just the that's kind just of year it's been.
That's just because it's somewhere between Monday and Sunday.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, listen, we talked about interest rates a little bit earlier just with regards to, you know, how interest rates are set. But interest rates also directly impact valuation multiples. Okay. So when rates are lower, then you get a higher present value of future earnings, and so you get higher PEs. And when rates are higher, you tend to have lower PEs and margin pressures on businesses. Okay, because basically when you're buying a stock, what you're paying for is future earnings.
Yeah.
And those future earnings get discounted back to today based on interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And there are the, what they call the discount rate. And so higher discount rate is, you know, then lower, you know, lower expectation of growth, you know,
mm-hmm.
vice versa. So as we said earlier, Fed funds are still in the 4.25% to 4.5% and sitting in Canada about 2.75%. But every 100 basis points move in long-term yields, every 1%, can alter equity valuations by 5% to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening now is the equity risk premium has narrowed, meaning investors are getting paid less for taking on the risk of investing in stocks than they do for bonds. So again, as we talked earlier, you know, we've got 10-year U.S. Treasury bonds at 4.35%, Canadian 10-year bonds 3.45%. They start to become competitive to stocks when you can get a pretty good guaranteed rate, you know, guaranteed by government bonds.
Yeah, but I mean, so, just got to look at the yield curve. So the yield curve shows short-term money higher
yep.
than medium-term money and lower than long-term, right?
That's right,
so,
yeah.
I don't know.
It's a funny, yeah, it's a funny shape of the yield curve right now. But as I say, you can only, you know, look at, as an investor, where am I going to invest a dollar today? You mm-hmm. know, you've got a choice. And when treasury yields or government bonds are yielding decent returns, it can become a competitor.
For sure.
For stocks, for sure.
Well, and let's talk about the hidden inflation driver, which we started off this episode with. Kind of a longer episode, it feels like, today.
Yep.
But maybe not. Inflation and where is it coming from? It's not even correlated. It's like, it's more than correlation. It's causation to tariffs, right?
Sure.
And the problem is that these tariffs are changing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
Yeah.
It's led to a lot of companies not giving their forward guidance on where they see their company profitabilities because they don't know what their input costs are going to be, right?
Yep.
And that's causing an impact in markets. It's causing an impact for inflation. And so this is a tough one to measure.
Yep.
Right. Because even the other day there was a 50% tariff placed on some copper.
Yes.
Not all copper, but some copper.
Yep.
You know, that'll probably be reduced at some point.
Sure.
On some of it.
Yep.
But maybe not all of it.
Yeah. It's a very important metal too. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So those inflationary issues based around tariffs are directly delaying interest rate cuts out of the Federal Reserve and other central banks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing about tariffs, you know, and you can, you know, depending on what your view is, you know, tariffs, they're often presented as, oh, those countries are going to pay. Like, oh, Canada's going to pay the tariffs, you know, 50% tariffs on steel and aluminum. Canada doesn't pay the tariffs.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, tariffs are duties that are collected at the border. When somebody, you know, in the U.S., for example, buys Canadian steel or aluminum, those purchasers of steel and aluminum, you know, have to pay the duties. And so it's either businesses or consumers that ultimately pay the tariffs.
Yeah.
Now, with 50% tariffs, it just means that, you know, the amount of product that gets shipped to the U.S. in this case will be depleted dramatically because businesses won't be able to pay, you know, a 50% tariff, and so they'll have to try to find other sources, or they'll have to pay the tariffs and build the pricing into their products.
Yeah.
So it's an economically regressive strategy, particularly for the consumer. Hasn't shown itself yet in the U.S. data, but I would certainly expect that over the next, you know, several months or quarters, we're going to see some impact from the various tariffs.
Yeah, because it's just a tax on your own people.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So listen, so what does that mean for the portfolio? You know, so what are the implications for portfolio? What to watch? Well, again, diversification, even more important, and more important right now. So you've got things like high valuations. You've got things like tariffs, which we don't know what the impact are going to be. So you want to be as diversified as possible, diversified geographically, and diversified by type of stocks. So we've talked in the past about value stocks versus growth stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, value stocks tend to outperform when rates are high or rising, Mm-hmm. Growth stocks tend to thrive on rate cuts and loose interest rate policy. And so, and you've seen that now, growth stocks, mainly AI, some technology and AI stocks, mm-hmm. have been doing extremely well, whereas some of the other more value-oriented type sectors have not been. And that can change very, very quickly, depending on what's going on in the market.
Yep.
There's lots of earning revisions, there's global central bank decisions, and tariff announcements, and all of those are things to watch. But not necessarily things to act on, because with a well-diversified portfolio, you've sort of done everything you can.
Yep.
So as we've said before, we can't control tariffs, we can't control rates, but we can certainly control exposure to risk and exposure to overvaluation through our diversification and asset allocation strategies.
Yeah, well said.
So there you have it. I don't know what else to say.
That was a lot. I know this was maybe a bit more technical than we're used to doing. Well, not that we're used to doing, but we're used to saying.
Right.
But these are important things. When I think about the pressure being put on the head of the Federal Reserve
yep.
to cut rates in a period of time when inflation is higher than normal
mm-hmm.
and the illogical rate cuts that are being demanded.
Right.
And what that, imagine if they did cut rates, what would that do to the right. markets?
Yes.
That would cause a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then having that political overlay on the central banks is causing a lot of issues,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And having global tariffs raising the cost of everything that we consume.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sounds lovely.
Other than that, have a nice day.
All right. Well,
okay, well, we'll leave it at that.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.